Welcome to Brand Appeal, where we talk about brand storytelling in the digital age. I'm your host, Shannon Peel, and today is the 100th episode and my 100 episodes in 100 days challenge. There are very few leaders in this world that I really admire, and this gentleman is one of them. So I feel very honored to have Anthony Grupo on Brand Appeal today. So listener, if you are interested in how you can achieve success at work, how to have a better outlook on your life and career and business and how to even make it to the top, this is the episode for you. So keep on listening as I chat with Anthony Grupo, former CEO of Marsh Commercial UK, regional CEO of Marsh & McLennan Northeast and Southwest. He started his career as a construction worker, then a repo man, and made his way to the top of the corporate ladder in the insurance industry. Anthony, thank you so much for joining me today on Brand Appeal. And I've got one question for you. What do you want to be known for?
Such a great question, right? Because you get involved in reinvention. You know, when you think about conventional retirement, I just don't think that way. And I think about reinvention and how to really help communities. So what I hope will happen is that, you know, from a career standpoint, there'll be some people from around the world. I was blessed to work with so many that were able to achieve certain goals and aspirations in their careers. And now that hopefully we can help people through our upcoming Grupo Family Foundation that's being built and help build foundation for maybe those that are a little less fortunate.
Wow. So you're going into charity and you're giving back in your retirement.
Yeah, it's a new world from, you know, I've always been very involved as either a board member or certainly gift giving and charity work. But now I think it's time to, you know, I've been very blessed in my life and my career, and now to actually form a foundation. It'll be the Grupo Family Foundation. It'll be a donor advised fund in conjunction with Community Foundation of Sarasota. And we'll be able to look at charities all over America and actually internationally as well, if we so decide to, you know, be able to fund it and help people. Because, you know, Shannon, and you know this very well from your work, is that there are a lot of small organizations that $1,000, $5,000 means a great deal to.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So if you can spread that out among a lot of different organizations, hopefully we can be of some help.
An interesting time in the world, and there's a lot of need all over the world. There's a whole generation of leaders who are retiring. I saw a graph yesterday, actually, that showed a number of baby boomers had retired, and the retirement rate had just skyrocketed during the pandemic. But now a lot of them are coming back to work. What does it take to retire successfully? Like, when you go from being someone like yourself, who was an international CEO of a major corporation, which meant you were go, 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 go all the time. And then all of a sudden, your time is yours.
Yeah.
How can you successfully transition through that?
I did not feel a transition at all. I think I've always tried to live my life that my career or what I did professionally, what you do is not who you are. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of people who have a hard time leaving that because their identity is wound up in it. I always tried to be diverse, right? I tried, you know, as an author, a speaker, certainly as a CEO and other pursuits. And most recently, you know, because you were so instrumental in helping me, you know, publish my first book of poetry, is that you have to leave room for others, right? You have to, as soon as you're in your position, you have to be thinking about your replacement. And I was very lucky to have such a great team in the United Kingdom and make that transition, because otherwise you become that dam in a river of opportunity for others. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, we hopefully we're still competitive and we still have the energy and the speed. But, you know, look, I'm going to be 68 years old. If not now, when? Yeah. When is enough, and when do you make that decision? So I honestly, Shannon, I transitioned to Bohemian Beach Bum in about 10 minutes.
Wow. But you didn't stay idle, because you've got this whole family foundation going on. And I know that you've been doing some other work with coaching some leaders and being on boards. So you stay busy.
Yeah. Look, it's easy to be busy. It's very hard to be productive. Most people are busy. You see them, you know, you see them on social media and other environments. And every even small children are busy. Right? We've made it difficult for children to just be children with the expectations that are put upon them. And the same thing happens to adults. I would say to you that we have such a diversity of talent inside of our humanity, inside our fabric, that you can do so many different things. You don't have to be bottled up. So that it never feels like it's a transition. It always feels like a threshold. And you don't feel like you're stepping away. You feel like you're stepping into a new environment. And I think it's just healthier.
Well, you've gone from one position to another position to another position, like you were saying before, where you're talking about how if someone, you know, stays in a position and wants to hold on to it and become almost like you said, a dam, they also lose out in getting new opportunities. Like your willingness to move to new opportunities and make way for somebody else gave you so much more of a story and so many more experiences and adventures. I mean, you could have stayed in one company and just said, okay, I'm the president or I'm the CEO and I'm not moving because this is my identity. But you really had an interesting career.
Yes. No, I've been very blessed. I have, you know, I've lived so many places and I've been able to, I was blessed to be work internationally, and you meet just amazing people. It's always that, you know, that saying is always true. It's the ordinary people that do the most extraordinary things. Mm-hmm. There's no leader that could ever achieve, no man or woman could ever achieve their individual goals if not for the fabric of others sitting there with them. So I was always really blessed like that over 45 years. What happens, Shannon, you said it very well, is that when you think about that new opportunity, people say, well, how are you going to stay busy? How do you keep your mind sharp? Well, that's not hard. I mean, I didn't know anything about foundation. So I put a team around me, right, to help me learn that. I formed and founded Grupo LLC to also help with, you know, the media work and coaching and project work or things that come up, little, you know, jobs here and there. And then, of course, to build a foundation. But when I go to the meeting with foundation leaders and team, legal and everything, I'm a student. I love that, right? It just creates such an energy because I don't know how to build a foundation, but they do. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'll fund it. And now it's exciting because it's like, I've never done this before. So, you know, that enterprise of reinvention is the fountain of youth.
Mm-hmm.
So unfortunately, you and I have talked about this. In fact, you've written about this in some of your blogs and other pieces, is that sometimes if nobody wants your job, eventually you don't either.
That's right.
And there's a lot of people out there that just get set in their ways. They become traditionalist and then they're not bringing the same energy and innovation. And they wonder why people aren't excited anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I hear a lot, I've been talking to a lot of people about the job market and how it's changing and why a lot of the like ageism has come down to all 45. It's not 65 anymore. It's 45. And a lot of ex-gen are being pushed out because they want young blood.
Ah, good.
But is that because we get too comfortable in our positions and we stop learning and we stop thinking that, oh, we don't have to go to those conferences. We've done that. We paid our dues.
It's a personal decision. I know leaders that are 80 that have more energy than 12, 18-year-olds. But I do see that sometimes people get very beat down by the tradition and the process and the brutality sometimes of bureaucracy. There's a brutality to it. Eventually, people acquiesce and give in sometimes. And it takes that bit of rogue mindset, that bit of entrepreneurial, right? I, you and I have had a discussion that I don't see a CEO as a chief executive officer. I see a CEO as a, you know, someone who can coach themselves and others, be entrepreneurial in how they think and act like an owner. Therefore, everyone can be a CEO regardless of their title. And you see people chase titles. I never chased a title. I chased the challenge and the title found you. Mm-hmm. I never thought like, oh, I can't wait to have the corner office as a senior vice president. What? Man, I was better off in my car moving around. Yeah, I was thinking about that. I think that's what people have to think about for themselves is don't box, whether you're 18 or you're 80, don't box yourself in a traditional thinking of thinking you have to comply with how everything looks. You can create the view differently for you and the ones that others are seeing.
Yeah, because this is a real time of change and transition in the labor market with people going remote and some people not being able to manage that because they don't trust others or they don't know how to communicate remotely or all of that stuff. But when the lockdown came, you were able to transition a whole organization to remote. How did you do that so well?
Yeah, you know, there were 3,000 colleagues, you know, 60 different locations in three different countries. If you think Scotland, Wales, England. There was a time as a younger professional when I had it wrong, when I thought that the only people you trusted were the ones that have as much to lose as you do when things go wrong. And that was a mistake. That was youth. That was ambition. That was ego. I had it wrong. And I learned to rebuild myself around that kind of thinking. I just trusted people. And it takes a great deal of communication. So, for example, I put a private line in my flat in London for colleagues to call in the evenings or weekends, certain times, to talk about anything they wanted to talk about. We just called it the CEO Cares line when we were in lockdown. It lit up like a Christmas tree. And it was amazing what I was able to learn and ascertain from the people. People really living through this and working through it. I was in lockdown just like they were. And we had one of our best years financially as a company, 2 years actually during the pandemic period, because we realized that if you trust people, they'll get the job done. Mm-hmm. Now there are things, and we built a playbook of about 14 things that you need to kind of do it together in a collaborative environment. There's certain things you have to, but why would we have someone spend 2 hours in transporting to an office, unproductive time, when they can start on their own clock? And it means a lot to women in the workplace. Why is it? It's tragic, right, that a woman in the height of her career sometimes has to quit her job because she needs to care for an aging parent. Mm-hmm. And sadly, men will gladly write a check for care. Mm-hmm. So men have to realize that we're all in this together, men and women, looking after our families. But when you work in a hybrid environment, she or he doesn't have to do that. We can help them. And the same thing with single moms and dads, who by the time they get home from work, by the time they've commuted, it's so late they don't have time to read a story to their babies.
Well, I know, because I remember when I had the daycare and I was running the daycare, I'd have kids dropped off at 6:30 in the morning, get picked up at 6:30 at night, and they were going off to one activity or another. And then they had homework, and then they had to be in bed because they had to be back at my house at 6:30 the next morning. I was with their children more than their parents were.
Yeah. Oh, most definitely. Most definitely.
Sorry. And the thing is, I live in Canada. So when I got the kids, they were one and they'd already had a whole year with their mom. Mm. Right. So when I hear stories of people in the States, women in the States having to go back to work after 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, it boggles my mind, and have to pump while in between meetings. Mm. That's just humiliating. And how much more productive would an office be? I mean, I'm not saying the small offices, but the big offices, like the big, like the States has a lot of big corporations, but why can they not put a daycare somewhere in the building for them, for their employees?
Yeah. So there are reasons why that sometimes become difficult. And a lot of it is around the safety and liability issues that permeate around a daycare. I remember going back as far as the 80s and 90s when we took that concept, and it was, you had a whole safety issue with maybe parents that were estranged, or someone has a restraining order, and all other kinds of things that that office environment, or those types of people aren't equipped, right? Even though you put that daycare professionals, the company becomes extremely liable for those issues. So it became a little bit problematic. It can be done, but it was a little difficult. Now with a hybrid environment, we can figure it out. We figured it out, right? We did it for 2 years. You alluded to it earlier, didn't you? When you said it's about a trust thing, that sometimes people feel that they can only lead or manage if they can see the people. Well, I know a lot of leaders that don't even say hello to people when they walk past them, let alone how you think you're going to lead that way. So it is, you have to choose to be a communicator, care about people, be really interested, make sure that middle line and other line leaders are paying attention to people and how their performance goes and all that. Because an underachiever is going to beat you anywhere. Mm-hmm. If they're an underachiever, they're going to beat you in the office or they're going to beat you at home. It doesn't, right? They're underachievers. They're just not their poor performers. So you've got to be able to make sure that you address those issues, whether it's hybrid or not. But I think, look, there are people, Shan, you see it now, that they're leaving their jobs because they don't want to go back to the office 5 days a week. Mm-hmm. I think we can figure this out because we did. And I think we could do better.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see what happens in the next 5 years and how things change. But at least you get to be in the retirement world and don't have to deal with these problems.
No, I don't.
No. But I love the fact that you were so open to people calling you and anyone from the office.
Yes, it didn't matter. Yeah, anywhere.
And as you were saying, it covered three countries, 3,000 people, 60 offices. This wasn't just a one small little business that you were leading.
And yeah, no, it, because people had the same issues right now. You know, there are, when you have that homogeneity and you can listen to people, you start to see where the common thread are, and that's where you go to solve the issue.
Yeah, not many CEOs make themselves as available to the people that they lead.
Well, we're only servant leaders. We're there for a short period of time, and then you want to, like, just like remodeling a home, you want to leave it better for the people that move into it. Mm-hmm. So I never looked at it as mine. I looked at it as that I rented it on behalf of others, and I was there to serve the clients, the communities, and the colleagues. Not my personal agenda.
You know, I've learned a lot since we've met. I've learned a lot about certain things from you. And one of the things I learned in your story, and someone else's, Nicholas Jeffries as well, has the same similar story, in that you started as a middle-class kid, mm-hmm. who, you know, just doing his thing. You were a construction worker.
Yes.
And you were just like, okay, I don't really like this. What else can I do? But you did one thing that most people don't think to do, they feel they need to have permission to do and are scared to do. And that is, you walked up to people who had jobs that you thought looked cool, and you asked them, hey, how can I have your job?
It gives me a reflection for a moment, doesn't it? Because I'm thinking back to that, you know, 18-year-old boy or 20-year-old boy. And I guess there was just this, I had to break free of, maybe this is as good as you can get. I was lucky to grow up in such a loving family, but I grew up in a very, very small town. Mm-hmm. My graduating class had like 36 students. And, you know, I think our whole town was maybe 1,000 people. And you think, well, how can I really break this? Mm-hmm. And he realized, there's a lot of stories in some of my books about it, you know, how, you know, things that are falling on from a height on a construction job or whatever it might be. You just realize that you just try it, because you can always go back. You just can. Mm-hmm. And what if you can move forward and just keep moving forward and just keep trying new things? Because there are people that just fear success more than they probably fear failure. You've seen them, Shannon, haven't you? That they start off great, but they can't finish. They can't close.
Is there somebody on this call that's like that?
Not you. Are you kidding me? You're one of the most productive humans I've ever met, ever.
Yeah, productive, but that doesn't mean that I can get it to a point where it's monetizable.
I've always attributed to your intellect. you have a very high intellect. You know you can do multiple things, so you just go ahead and try it, right? It's fantastic.
I'm basically retired. I'm living off my savings, just like anyone else. And I can't stop learning new things. When something comes up, it's like, oh, let me try this. And then I don't just try it. I jump into it for 3 months to figure every little piece of it out.
I don't think it's a bad thing, right? You just, because there are intellectual adventurers that have that mindset, and it turns out okay. I would just say to the listeners is that you're more ready than you think you are. Mm-hmm. You don't have as much time as you think you do. Mm-hmm. And try those things that no one wants to do and go those places that perhaps no one wants to go to.
That is great advice because it's those, you know, when I think about like my brother, when he was trying to get in on as a lineman in BC Hydro, or at the time when guys were trying to be RCMP, when there was no jobs, they could get a job if they wanted to go to Northern BC or Northwest Territories, north of the Yukon, places that nobody else wanted to go and do. But when they came back, they were further ahead in their careers than the people who had stayed in the city. So being having that adventurous spirit, being able to go out, wanting to experience the world, because how many places have you lived in your lifetime?
California, Texas, Pennsylvania, of course, where I'm from. United Kingdom, New York, when I ran the northeast part of the United States, southeast, southwest. Yeah, there's been a few. Yeah.
You know, you didn't just stay in one place. When someone said, hey, Grupo, we need you over here, you went, okay. And you didn't ask how. There was no obstacle. You just went, I'll figure it out as I go.
Yeah, there's this moment of evolution. I've often said that change is for everyone, but evolution is for the motivated. And there are times that they're staggering, crushing. They're almost paralyzing. Like when you go to, like, for example, to another country and nothing's familiar. Doctors, food shops, everything. The left and right side of the road is traveled differently. Nothing is familiar.
Yeah.
And at the same time, you've got to turn a company. You've got to figure it out. That moment, you become, you either you get it or it breaks. It breaks you and it breaks everyone around you. But that moment that actually comes to you and says, no, you know what? We're gonna get this done, sets you up for how to handle anything. Mm-hmm. Like it takes a great deal to really knock my pins out. Like you have to really work at it. Because I'm just not trapped by the drama that you see that so many people have. I'm like, why are they doing that to themselves?
Well, it's that fear piece, right? Because we've talked about my anxiety levels and how it holds me back. And you don't have that fear piece. You just...
I mean,
you have the fear, but you just do it.
I don't let fear sleep overnight.
Right.
So when I have fear, it can visit. It just can't stay. Can't stay overnight.
So how do you get it to leave?
Because for me, fear is just a total of lost moments. That's what I'm afraid. I'm afraid of the lost moment where I could have really tested myself or been a help to others. That's what we should be afraid of. You know, when I say afraid of, I mean, failures are just feedback. I don't think about, oh, that was a failure. No, it wasn't. It was feedback. And now you rebuild, you try it again. So I just don't look at it that way. I just see it as fear as a total lost moment. So don't lose those moments. And then you won't be afraid. What are you going to be afraid of? You're going to be more afraid of knowing you could have done it and you did not do it. Mm-hmm. Look, I have anxiety about this foundation. I'm like, okay, Anthony, like, you know, what are you doing, boy? You know, like, I want to, you know, I'm out there shooting my mouth off. I'm going to have a family foundation. It's called the Grupo Foundation. I'm going to fund it. We're going to help charities. I'm like, okay, well, here we go. Because in my mind, it's simple. Get the right people, give them the money, and then find good people and give them the money. Mm-hmm. So we'll get after it.
Well, it's interesting when you say find the good people, because a lot of businesses nowadays are saying that there are no good people. There's no one, no good talent, or no, there's no talent out there, no good people to hire. Is that true?
No, of course. No, it's tragic when I hear it. I'll hear things like, oh, the millennials are lazy. They want everything in a short period of time. They want things. Why can't they be like us? Well, that's what they said about us. Like, we were the us at one time. Look at these kids, you know. It's just not true. And there are underperformers and underperformers in every decade of age bracket.
Right.
I'm around brilliant young people who are incredible. And the thing is, you've got to give them a chance, though. What we've gotten wrong is a lot of times we say, well, we're going to get them a mentor. Some of the people we give them to be mentors, they wouldn't know a mentor if it came up and smacked them.
Right.
But we say, oh, this is your mentor. We have to spend time with those individuals that coach and those that are being coached and really teach it and how to grow your own. But it's not true. If it was true, then that would be true of every generation. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't, was it? So why is this one or these next two, the ones that we're singling out to fail? I don't buy it because it's not my reality. It's not what I've seen.
It's more my generation that had obstacles, because when we came into the workforce, hey, you baby boomers were still there.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't, yeah. There was no jobs there, you know, then yeah, the millennials coming up behind us with all this promise, and everyone's looking at the millennials with promise and they forgot, like, well, we just do the work over here. And it's really an interesting conversation to have because, yes, there are certain things that happened due to the amount of people that were born between this year and this year and that year and that year. We all are individuals and we all have made choices, and where we end up in life in the end is dependent on the choices we make, not the year we were born.
Agreed.
That's
agreed.
The decisions our grandparents and parents made determine where we start. Where we end is 100% up to us.
Yeah. I don't know why we have to have labels to begin with. I don't know why we have to have Gen X, Gen Y. What a great woman leader. Why can't we say what a great leader?
I know. We need to start. One of the things that really does get into get me, and I did say this to a woman of color, and she, if she could have slapped me, she would have. Because I was saying we need to break down the silos, break down the groups, not have these movements that celebrate what makes people different. But we need to start focusing on what makes us the same. Because as long as we focus on what makes us different, we're going to see each other as different and we're not going to connect. We connect and trust people who are what we see as intrinsically like us. And if all we're focusing on is the color of your skin, we never get to know you. And if we never get to know you, because all you talk about is the color of your skin, then I'm never going to be able to have that opportunity to connect with you because I won't know anything else about you.
Yeah, look, there's a lot to this, right? There are a lot of people, for whatever reason it's happened to them, right, that they've been victims of racism or other things. They scream so loudly that no one hears them.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you an example. When I was over in the United Kingdom, there was not a lot of diversity in some of the quadrants in different places. So what I've always done, no matter where I was, is I've always gone where I'm the minority. For example, if there was sickle cell anemia events or other things where I would go where I may be the only one of three white CEOs or something, because then that's how you can recruit and you can understand the issues. People sometimes are just unwilling to go where it's not what they don't know or comfortable with.
Because we're not comfortable when we see people as different, because we don't feel like they're wrong.
I think it's because we're not comfortable sometimes with ourselves. You see a very confident individual who's good with their own skin and who they are and have a humility about what they've done, they're comfortable everywhere.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting.
They don't see color. They don't see color. They don't hear different music. They don't see a different dance step. They don't see the corporate racism of label. They don't see the color of skin. They just have a love for humanity, the adventure of it all.
Mm-hmm.
And the kindness and compassion of which we can do as a whole of all our races combined. I never felt out of place, even though I look to be completely out of place.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't we just get there?
I'd love us to get there. I'd love everyone to get there. Because then it's all about you as an individual and what you can accomplish.
Yeah.
And what you can do. I want to get back to your career, though, because you have so much to offer people and leaders, especially because of your style of leadership and how you led people. Because you inspired and motivated. You know, I've seen you speak. There's not even a word for how motivating it is, because it's beyond motivating. You are inspiring, and it comes down to how you treat people, everyone that's in that room. You're not looking for the people who are at the top of the ladder. You're just interacting with whoever's right there in front of you.
Yeah, everybody has a great importance to them. Thank you for those kind words. The people you pass on the way up in your career are the same people you will see on the way down. And if you get it wrong and you don't care, then they're going to help grease those rungs of the ladder. You can slide easier. Mm-hmm. I've had such great stories of people who, because I talked to them and I got to understand them, they became such integral parts in a great story. I mean, there's hundreds of them who, Aranye, who was my CFO in the UK, what a brilliant man. He was a CFO, but now he's the CFO for all of Asia. And when I met him, he was this quiet, unassuming man of great character who, when I spoke to him and I was like, you know, I realized he was a strategist, and I gave him other newer, different opportunities that he didn't think he was ready for. But he, as I said, you're more ready than you think you are. Amanda Brown, who is an HR leader and now is in a global position. It's just story after story, because you just got to let them try. Mm-hmm. And then be there for them. Because some people say they want to give people an opportunity, but often they just really just still keep controlling the environment. And they, instead of being there to be a member of that success, they want too much of the credit. You know, I think Reagan said it, that it's amazing what a man can do if he doesn't care who gets the credit.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's also based in fear, in that they know that the project has to be done. They're giving it to someone that's untested, and there is a lack of trust in that it's going to get done, because they only trust themselves.
Yeah, no, that happens a lot. So they become command and control leaders. They become explosive, unpredictable. They're emotional powder kegs, but people are afraid of them. And the bullying kind. Most places I've had to go, where I've had to turn organizations to be more successful, my primary focus truly was to take out the bullies. I mean, that had to happen first, right? Everybody knew that's what should happen, but nobody really did it. And that's such a massive part. Once people see that somebody takes on the bullies, then it starts to heal itself.
Why do we allow the bullies to take such so much power and nobody actually does anything?
People are afraid of the revenue loss. They often are afraid they have a book of business, or they're rainmakers or whatever they were. And so they're afraid of losing business. And I've told those individuals, you know, those people that are a problem, I say, I don't care I'm fine if you met. I'm okay with starting over. Every day I wake up and I feel like I started zero. So I'm okay with that. And often they don't leave. Now, if they can't change, you have to exit them, or they have, you know, certainly get adjusted to how it's going to be. Sometimes it's just a fear of going back and having to report to someone that business was lost, but they don't realize the loss, how good the business could have been, and the people that were lost because they left because of that individual. Mm-hmm. So you have to do the right thing, and then be creative and innovative and strong enough to lead people through it and get them on the other side and get them to have success. And that's what a leader he or she has to do.
I know that that's what type of leader that you are, but can you give me some examples of leaders in the world who are like that and who have exemplified that and have successful businesses? Because as media, social media, they shine a light on like the Elon Musks, the Steve Jobs, the Bezoses, and say these are great leaders. And really, the end does not justify the means.
Yeah, no, there are the Barry Becks of the world, the Hirsch Kozlovs. I mean, there are the Jennifer Walshes. There are these amazing people who, there's so many, right? Countless too. And I want to be careful on that, so names.
I know.
You know, it's just, you didn't say me.
Okay. On an aside here, let's remember, folks, he is retired. He is in retirement brain.
So, you know, there are just so many, you know, there are the Christopher Lays. There's just so many that the Dave Eslicks of the world. It's just Christina Mott. There's so many that you don't know who they are because they don't want you to. Mm-hmm. They just want the lights to always be on someone else. Tucker Solomon, who is just like we have Shark Tank in mm-hmm. America. They have Dragon's Den.
Yep. In Canada, we have Dragon's Den too.
You have Dragon's Den. So, you know, Tucker Solomon. He said an amazing thing recently. He said, having a lot of followers on Instagram is like having a lot of money in Monopoly.
Isn't that the truth?
I thought that's so powerful. That's so powerful. And people, they just, we're rewarding the wrong thing. We're chasing the wrong gold. And we have to just look at those people around us and try to really be servant leaders. And it's amazing what you'll achieve, the blessings that will be bestowed upon you.
Your career was being a servant leader and helping others and shining the light on others and always giving credit. You're one of the most humble leaders I've ever met. And yet look at where you ended up. You didn't need to beat your own chest in order to get to the top, is my point. People saw it.
You've already arrived where you need to be. Now it's just a matter of who you want to go on a journey with. Because you can't take everyone with you. That's part of the great sadness, too, is that there are casualties. There are people who, for whatever reason, they can't make the journey with you because they can't leave a comfort zone or a certain situation. A lot of people around the world never travel more than 50 miles from where they're born. Mm-hmm. And that's okay, right? That's okay for people. But just know you can't take everyone with you. And then you're going to feel an anchors. You're going to feel bindings around you of those people in other situations going to try to hold you right where you are, because for you to come loose means that they have to look at themselves and you have to be okay, because there's a great difference between alone and loneliness. There is a loneliness of command, but it doesn't have to be that way. Yes, there are things that only you will know and only you can handle, but you'll find out in sometimes the darkest hour, when you feel that perhaps it's too hard, you will be amazed at the people that will stand with you when smoke clears.
I don't think there's anything you can do, you cannot do. You have done so much and you take on a challenge. You see a challenge like, oh, I'm going to write a book of poetry now. I'm going to go do this now. I'm going to set up this foundation now. It's this attitude of adventurism.
Is there? I would say to everyone that when you get up in the morning, look at everything as theater. Life is just theater. You're going to see tragedy, comedy, drama, heroes, villains, all kinds of things are going to come on. Just don't go on the stage yourself every time. Mm-hmm. Sit back, be the director, be a producer, be an attendee, be the audience. You don't have to be in every skit that comes in front of you. And people lose their energy they're, because they get caught up in, that's why people love to watch TV. That's about other people's misery. They love true crime. I'm like, what's happened?
I know.
They love true crime. The Johnny Depp, Amber Heard, millions are watching this thing because there's some solace in saying that, you know what? Other people got it pretty bad too. That's the wrong lens. The lens I would prefer we think about is, life is but theater. And imagine the play you can produce. Mm-hmm. Imagine the applause that you can get because you help people who thought that maybe they could never feel the adventure themselves.
Did you ever aspire to be the CEO of a big corporation?
Hell no. I, you know, just started as, you know, on straight commission, selling door to door. And then things just keep progressing. I didn't want it. I didn't think I was often the right person for it. I always thought there must be someone better. And as it went along, I realized that perhaps maybe that was exactly what needed to happen, was a CEO who just really didn't think they were that good at it, mm-hmm. thought they needed everyone else. And then things turned out.
Because what you could do is you go in and you turn the companies around. they sent you in when things were bad.
Yes.
And you were willing to take that on.
Yes.
You weren't going into the easy peasy stuff.
No, it was always worse than I thought when I got there. But there are always good people, and who wanted to win and wanted to be successful. And then you get them. There's other people you have support that support you, companies, other leaders. You have that support around you because they want to win. Mm-hmm. And then if you can get other barriers out of the way, you win.
If you're going to give a presentation to a college graduating class,
mm-hmm.
and in today's environment, what would you tell them they need to do to start?
Yeah, I guess I would say to them that know now that as you graduate, you will never graduate from the game you're about to join. Mm-hmm. Or the school you're about to go to. For the rest of your life now, you're going to be a lifetime learner. And I want you to think as you to be successful, you have to be four individuals and you have to work on all four individuals. You have to become a facilitator. You have to become a strategist. You have to think consultatively and you have to learn how to close. You have to learn how to be direct in your communication and you got to ask hard questions and you got to become immovable until you get the answer. Facilitator, consultant, strategist, and closer. Lifetime learner, student of the game of life. You're more ready than you think. And surround yourself. If you have losers in your life, cut them loose. Do not hang around with people who are not motivated. Doesn't mean you can't be friends with them, but do not let them consume your time. Mm-hmm. Be disciplined in your day. The greats who breathe a very rarefied air, you wouldn't think they are, but they're incredibly organized and disciplined. In fact, I find myself even more so now because I have time. So I'm able to really get a lot in a day. I'm like, oh, this is fantastic. Like, this is crazy, you know, because it's so cool, right? You have the time now. Mm-hmm. You have the time to be like, I don't have to sit in a board meeting for 3 hours. Right now it's like, oh, I this is so wonderful. And so that's what I would say to them. And just don't settle.
Right.
Within yourself. What I mean within yourself, don't settle.
Don't settle.
You got to push yourself.
Yeah.
You do. You're better than you think.
It's all that constant.
And you're better than what people think of you. That's the other thing, because they don't know you.
There's that as well, isn't there?
Yeah.
How did you find the strength, confidence, and courage to step in to that CEO role?
I guess I wanted to see where the edge was. I felt it one day, you know, life on the edge. I had really taken a couple of shots, right? It was tough. And it was a tough time. And I looked around, there's no one there. And I realized that the edge was the safest place to be because it's hard for people to come out on the edge with you. And I realized that day that if I could get out on the edge, I could push myself there and try what maybe looked impossible. And I could keep doing that, keep building bridges. And maybe the people around me would realize they could do the impossible too. And I realized that in order to be on the edge, you had to take on those challenges of whether CEO, whatever it was. And then this comfort, this calm came. It was like a sweet smelling wind. I don't know how to describe it. I can remember the day. I remember where I was. I was in Torrance, California on a real bear of a situation. And I realized as I looked out over the Pacific that day from my apartment that the edge was the safest place to be. So I spent my life and my career seeking for the edge.
Did you ask for the opportunities or those edge opportunities or those challenges, or did they just come to you?
I had helped turn a situation in Erie, Pennsylvania on a company that was, you know, was growing at the time, but it needed some help. And there was a leader there, Patricia Haley, that helped me and joined up with me. And I think about Holly Bozant and in Texas, and God, there's so many. And I remember we were successful and I get a call and said, hey, you know, how'd you like to go with this other company? And, you know, they're looking for someone to travel to fix situations that are underperforming. And we don't know exactly where you'll go and how long you'll be there or the role you'll assume when you get there. But do you want to try that? I'm like, what? Like, I said, like, who's doing that now? And they're like, no one. They're like, we're going to try it. I was like, yeah, okay. Let's get it out of try. You can never lose, though. If you're a turn guy or woman, you don't get to go 4-1. You can only go 5-0. Because what good is a turn guy who can't turn? You have to do it. You can't miss. You don't get it. You don't get like, oh, that's okay. There is no that's okay in that business.
It's you either do it or you're gone.
Oh yeah. 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 I've been lucky. You know, most CEOs don't have longevity, and I've been lucky. I was blessed. I was always either promoted through or asked to go to something else. I mean, yeah, I was lucky.
What I find really interesting is that where you would go to find the solutions to the problems.
Hmm. Yeah, well, so that's where, you know, you've got to really, that's where the muscle and the time comes in. You got to sit, it's a lot of hours. Right? It's a lot of pondering. It's a chess match. It's looking at a chessboard and trying to figure out what the move is and then asking other people. And then you got to be careful because you can't telegraph your move too soon because it can really freak people out. It can scare them. Oh, it's going to close this operation. Who knows what's going to happen? It can really, because you got to show confidence, even when you don't feel it, you got to show it. So yeah, it's a lot of model building and breaking tradition. Like a lot of times I've had to build something that didn't exist, proprietary models like Six Degree and others, like where success, the true success, I really think, Shannon, comes when people duplicate what you started when you're gone.
Mm-hmm.
If they keep running that model and trying it, then okay, then it was the right thing. But if it's the next person in charge and it all disseminates, then I would worry about that.
Or they have to go back and fix it again.
Yeah. And that's why all generations are important together, because we don't want to exit people that are older in their careers, because you need the master level who know how to fix the machine. And then you want the young people who aren't afraid to drive fast machines. And I don't think we need to dwell on labels anymore. I think we just need to dwell on creativity.
I agree with
courage.
You.
Courage. You got to have courage.
And you have shown that nothing is fatal.
No. What can happen? What's the worst thing can happen? Are you kidding? Like, what's going to happen? Like, I worked on construction where, you know, men and women can die. I was a repo man collecting or, you know, repossessing cars from people who wanted to do me bodily harm. That's a bad day. You lose a job? Really? No, but when you lose confidence or people lose confidence in you, if you lose the people, the hearts of the people, then you failed.
Yeah. Well, like you go out and you find people. How do you find the right people? How do you know that they're the right people?
Well, that's probably another podcast, isn't it? Forget the CVs, resumes, forget the traditional questions that are asked, and ask questions around six areas. It's what kind of leader are they? What kind of resources do they aspire to having internally and externally? What are they working on right now that's a research development that's challenging? For example, I'm rubbish at learning languages. I am determined. Like now I'm like, I have the time. I will learn languages. Ed, you have to look at what kind of outcomes they expect in their lives. Those are the kind of questions, not questions about, oh, then you say to them, well, you don't have enough experience. Well, of course they don't have enough experience. Idiot. They haven't been there working yet. Yeah. What have they done? What do they aspire to in lives? And that's how you start to find those people. And what do people think of them? And then you start to build upon those blocks. You start off by assuming, when you see that raw material and talent base, that everybody has within them the ability to be great. Instead of pigeonholing them against who you are or what you think they should look like. Oh, they have a tattoo on their neck. Oh, no. What? So you look at them as the building blocks with you, and you start, and you don't hesitate to cut when you made a mistake. And when you make a mistake, you'd say to tell people, I made an error. There are exchanges I did in the United Kingdom where I've been with thousands of people, and I'd say, look, I got to tell you something I made a mistake on. I called it wrong. I'm sorry. We're going to redo something. And like, with the CEOs don't apologize. They don't say they made mistakes. But when you do, people will support that, and they will come clean when they do too. And you can fix things early before they get out of hand.
Mm-hmm. Because they're not scared.
Yeah. What should I be scared of?
Well, if they're scared of getting fired. I mean, scared of not advancing, scared of getting yelled at. There's all sorts of things that people are scared of.
Yes, but if you play the game tight, if you are afraid of those things that someone will do to you, you will never do for yourself what you could have done, because you making moves to either make someone else look bad, protect yourself, cover something. That's why the bullies can get in charge.
Mm-hmm. Because people are scared of them.
Yeah.
And then they need someone like you who isn't scared of them.
They don't come from anything special. It came the same way I did.
Well, one thing that you always mention is that you never forgot where you came from.
Mm-hmm.
And you are down to earth. You're approachable. I mean, you connect with the people that work with you. And that's a huge difference. Because when you find those people that you want to work with that are good, because you're looking at their soft skills, you're looking at what kind of person are they or what kind of character they have. And then when you connect, they're connecting with you. And I know that because I see them on LinkedIn there, they want to succeed for you and for them and for the team.
People, I want to try to be succinct in the answer, but I want to be encompassing at the same time. People want the leader to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
Because they want everything to be okay. And they also want to show around their circle that they picked the right place to go. When a leader fails, people feel like they did too. Because they chose to go there. And it becomes a visceral reaction intrinsically to inside the spirit of the human.
Mm-hmm.
So I always looked at it as as a CEO of that, not the face of the company, but I'm one of the circuit boards for all of those energy components, all those people. That's why you have to trust them. That's why you have to get to know them. That's why you have to tell them when you made a mistake. That's why you have to back them when they make one. You have to protect them from people that, you know, don't want to do the right thing. And then it all comes together. And when you stand on the edge gets more broadened,
mm-hmm.
starts off being narrow. Maybe you're really balancing hard on it, but all of a sudden it just becomes very stable because the people balanced it. They were the counterweight. It's not that complex.
No, but I think egos get in the way. People get that CEO title and all of a sudden they know it, and especially if they think they know everything and they don't trust people to know more.
Well, they think they have to act like they know everything because they're the CEO. I see it the opposite, is that if I'm trying to get us somewhere, there's no way I can know because we're not there. We're built, we're working through it. We're going to try new things. There's no way I could possibly know that. So say you explain that we're going to try some models. If it doesn't work, we're going to try something else. We're not going to tinker forever, but we're going to work through this. And then people are bored. See, a lot of things that demise companies is boredom. You do the same thing all the time. They don't see any vision. They're like, is this what I'm going to do for the next 30 years? So what do they say? Oh, when am I going to get promoted? What do you mean I only got 2% raise? What do you mean I only got that bonus? And compensation, instead of being a scorecard, becomes a driving motivator when that's never was intended. That's not supposed to be the motivator. But what did you expect was going to happen? Mm-hmm. If you didn't lead them with vision and strategy, they got bored. You just bored them.
Well, Anthony, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. And
that was wonderful, Shannon.
You're
one of my favorite people. You're one of my favorite people ever, Shannon.
You're one of my favorite people too, Anthony. And thank you so much for being the 100th episode of my 100 and 100 days challenge. I really did not think I was going to get it done.
It's incredible. When you told me that, I was like, oh my God, she's amazing. Well, listen, congratulations to you, Shannon. All the best. And thank you for having me on the show.
Thank you. Listener, I hope that you enjoyed today's episode with Anthony and myself and the conversation that we had. I always enjoy talking with him. He is so smart. He has a great outlook on life. He's wise beyond years and such a massive servant heart with this humbleness that fuels him to see the works and possibility in others. We need more leaders like Anthony in the world. And if you are a leader and you are trying to learn how to be a better leader, this is a gentleman that you want to follow. Listener, I really want to know what you think of today's episode and as well as my 100 podcasts in 100 days challenge. And I hope that you took some time to peruse through appealing, maybe play the game of bingo for a prize or two. I don't know what my next brain burp is going to be and the ideas that I come up with in order to provide you with the information that you need to create an appealing life, career, or business. So I want to know what you are interested in and which episodes you enjoyed, which guests you'd like me to have back on, and the questions that you would like me to ask them. So jump over to marketappeal.com, click on the community button, go into the Brand Appeal community, and let's chat. By introduce yourself and answer some of the questions in the posts. Give me some feedback. Post about what you'd like to see, what you enjoyed, what you learned, and of course, what you want more of. Until next time, peel out.